Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to the Falcoholic Podcast. I am your host, Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin, joined by a very illustrious guest. He is former Commanders receiver and the host of the Believe in Commanders podcast, Anthony Armstrong at Mr. Armstrong 13 on Twitter. Anthony, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. The weather's a little cloudy over here in Texas, but you know, it's Thanksgiving week, so can't complain about that. Everything is good. How are you?
Good. It's I live in upstate New York, so it's quite cold.
Oh man, you got all that snow.
Yeah, I dodged it. So I live in Syracuse, and everyone's been calling me asking me like, "Oh, are you buried under snow?" And I was like, "We didn't get any snow. We got like some dusting." So it's Buffalo got like 77 inches. We got like maybe an inch. That's something. It's just how it goes. That lake effect snow. It's very like localized. So
that's above my. See, we got a couple of lakes down here, but we don't get snow like that in Texas.
Yeah. So. It's all about the Great Lakes. It's like a unique weather phenomena, especially about this time of year. So it's fascinating, but we'll save that for the meteorology. But guys, we are here to preview the Falcons versus the Commanders in Week 12. A crucial game for both teams, actually. The Falcons trying to sort of hold on to a playoff chance and really only a half game out of first place in the NFC South because of how poor the NFC South is. The Commanders, in a completely opposite situation, having a winning record but currently sitting outside of the playoffs at 6-5 because the Eagles have won a bunch of games, the Giants have won a bunch of games, but also right on the cusp of that second, third wild card spot, so right in the mix as well. Anthony, a lot of interesting things going on with the Commanders. Taylor Heinicke at cornerback again. Falcons fans very familiar from how he whooped us last year. How are things with the Commanders at this point in the season?
Yeah, I think right now the team is in a great position. And I was just sitting back looking. I was like, this is probably as good of a position they could be in. You know, and it sucks that the rest of the division is playing so well. I mean, 6-5 and you have the bye week coming up and you still get Chase Young coming back at some point, potentially this game where he is activated. That's a great spot to be sitting in for this team. Yeah, you made a switch from Carson Wentz back to Taylor Heinicke. I think that he's brought some calm to the offense. I mean, yes, you know, he's going to put the ball in some risky situations here and there, but I think the offense and the team overall has reacted better to him being under center. And you know, I'm excited for how they can finish this season. I think things are set up well for them to find their way into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think I agree, and I think the betting markets agree with you as well. Most markets seem to favor the Commanders over the Giants, sort of expecting the Giants to fall off, which seems like everyone has been sort of expecting that to happen. It's kind of started over the past couple of weeks, but really just a game and a half.
I think they
ran
out of gas. I think they've run out of gas. I mean, the Giants is great. The great story. I mean, Brian Daboll has been doing an awesome job with that team. But it just seems to be, you know, one, you trade away Kadarius Toney, and then now you have one of the receivers has a torn ACL. So, and then Kenny Galladay had never really gotten going. So they're losing at very, you know, important positions. And you have Saquon Barkley, who's, you know, probably one of the comeback players of the year. So it's tough to see them finding a way to get over the hump. And they have some tough games to finish the season.
Yeah. It's a. I think I would agree with the market saying that it's more likely that the Commanders, if they stay at this pace, are going to overtake them at some point. Probably difficult to catch the Eagles at this point, but wild card in the NFC completely wide open. So a great shot for the Commanders. Also, by the same token, the Falcons, if they were to get a win over the Commanders this week, would now have wins over three of the potential NFC wildcard teams. They've beaten the Seahawks, the 49ers, and then the Commanders. So that could be a very interesting situation if they were to do that and somehow tie with all these teams at the end of the season. But we got a long way to go before we potentially get to that scenario. So we'll focus on Week 12 now before we start doing all the playoff math. But yeah, I think this is a particularly challenging matchup for the Falcons, who have managed to run the ball quite well, but have not pass protected at a high level. And that is one of Washington's specialties. So we'll start off looking at the Falcons passing attack versus the Commanders' pass defense. Secondary has seemingly been a strength with Cam Curl doing a great job. I think Derek Forrest has also been playing really well. And of course, you've got Fuller at one of the cornerback spots. The Falcons just lost Kyle Pitts, possibly for the season, possibly not. That's a big loss. We still do have Drake London, who's been one of the best rookie wide receivers. Alamide Zaccheaus has stepped up along with Demir Byrd as the speedster. But overall, the Falcons passing game, not a high volume attack, certainly. It's been efficient, but pretty mediocre on the whole. And then, of course, the pass rush of Washington, like we said, really good, and possibly Chase Young coming back. So how do you feel about that matchup of the Falcons? We'll say limited passing attack versus Washington's very, very fearsome pass defense.
You know, I have to give all of the advantage to Washington in this category just based off the front five, front four, you know, that Washington's going to line up. I mean, between John Allen, Montez Sweat, and Deron Payne, I mean, you got 6.5 sacks by two inside tackles, and then Sweat is adding 6 sacks. Plus, he has like 20 quarterback hits. These guys get after the quarterback, and if you're not protecting Marcus Mariota, it's going to make for a very, very long day. And the other side of it is that these guys are really good against the run. So it's going to make it very difficult. You're going to have to decide how you want to win and attack Washington, but you got to give the edge to Washington here. That whole defensive line is extremely talented, and they're probably licking their chops, especially coming off this game against the Texans.
Yeah, that was utter domination for someone who has Damian Pierce in fantasy. Know how well that went for Houston. It did not go well at all. And what about Chase Young? Has there been any? I know it's early. We're recording this a little bit earlier in the week than we normally would, so we haven't gotten a practice report at this time. But do you think Chase Young's probably going to play this week, or is it more of a questionable tag?
Yeah, I think you probably lean to questionable. And listening to the broadcast last week, they're just saying that it really comes down to him mentally being ready to play. You know, I mean, you have to be able to quickly put your foot in the ground, plant, change direction, and react without having any sort of hesitation. If there's hesitation on the football field in the NFL, bad things happen. You get hurt, you give up big plays. So when he returns to his normal form, where he's reacting and just being able to put his foot in the ground and move, that's when you know he's going to be out there. Is that going to happen this week? I'm not sure. I wouldn't necessarily rush it. I knew that they had to activate him by Wednesday to get him, you know, to have him for the season. So you have to activate him, period. Does he play this week? I don't think he has to. I think the matchup, what you have already, you can roll out and get a win against Atlanta. So maybe he's going to be dressed and he's on the 53, but you probably won't see him on the field that much.
Yeah, it's such a different situation compared to the Falcons, where we're just looking for any bodies on the defensive line right now. In addition to losing Kyle Pitts, we also lost Taquan Graham, who was actually one of our biggest contributors there to IR as well. So it's just it's interesting to see, like, oh yeah, Chase Young, you know, he can take the week off. It's okay. Yeah, we're fine. You know, it's, oh wow, yeah, this Falcons fan. I know Falcons fans are very interested in Deron Payne potentially in free agency. Do you think there's a chance he leaves in free agency, or do you think Washington's gonna be aggressive in trying to re-sign him?
I mean, I just read a tweet by J.P. Finlay. He was speaking to Ron Rivera, and he said that they got to find a way to keep Deron Payne paired up with John Allen. And they know it's going to be an expensive price tag, but you got to find a way to do it. I mean, just it's hard to find a better tag team duo. I mean, you think about, Bebop and Rocksteady, like, these guys are completely dominating and they work so well together. And the scary thing is that you have the rookie Fedarian Mathis, who's been on IR since about week 2.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he could be dominating player down the line as well. But I think that Washington's they're gonna try to throw everything at Deron Payne to keep him in the building. And hopefully he gives them a little hometown discount. But Atlanta, I'm sure they're waiting with their hands wide open and a blank check to bring a dominating player like Deron back down south.
Yeah, because Falcons haven't had cap space for years. They're dealing with the most dead cap in NFL history in terms of dollar amount this year with $77 million. So they only are – right this year they're only working with about 60% of the cap. Next year, however, they will have upwards of, I think, $70 to $80 million in cap space. So they're going to go hard for some players. I know Daron Payne next to Grady Jarrett, probably just like Daron Payne next to Jonathan Allen. Very tantalizing duo. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But I would also expect Washington to do the full court press to keep him there. It does seem like if there's any place to attack the Washington pass defense, it's probably the cornerbacks with Benjamin St. Juste. And who's playing the slot? Is it Fuller? Or is it one of the other guys?
Well, you know, Washington's been rolling out with more of a three safety look now, right? Mm-hmm. So you've got Derek Forrest and, Derek Forrest and Cam Curl ranked 1 and 2 mm-hmm. as the top, safeties in the league. But then you throw in Bobby McCain. He's a guy that's able to play in that slot position as well. Cam Curl's also able to get down into the box and help with tackling, being close to the line of scrimmage. But out wide, Benjamin St. Juste is actually playing really well. He's doing a good job. We've got to see if he's going to be okay. He went out with an injury this last game. So we'll see if he's going to be all right.
Okay, something to monitor there potentially. Next up would be the Falcons rushing attack versus the Commanders rush defense, which is exceptional. Falcons also exceptional at running the ball. They are still one of the NFL's best rushing attacks. Outrushed the Bears last week, who were the NFL's number one rushing attack. Right now, the Falcons are 3rd in yards, 4th in attempts, and 6th in yards per attempt, but the Commanders are no slouches at stopping the run either. I believe Washington is in the top 10 in most metrics at defending the run. So this is one of the marquee matchups to watch in this game. Falcons rolling out Chris Lindstrom, who's the number one guard right now, according to PFF. Caleb McGarry's having a bounce back year in a contract year. Jake Matthews, of course, we know is good. The left side and the center position, a little bit weaker up front right now. Drew Dahlman having an okay second year, and then the Falcons lost starting guard Elijah Wilkinson to IR a couple weeks back, and they've been sort of rotating a million players at that spot. We know, of course, about the running backs, most notably Cordarrelle Patterson, who just set the NFL record for kickoff return touchdowns last week with 9, and they've got a stable of guys behind him as well with Caleb Huntley and Tyler Algier. Doing a great job. Anthony, what do you think about that potential matchup for the Commanders trying to stop Atlanta's rushing offense here?
I think on the rushing side, I think it's going to be okay. I got a little guy showed up for the guest appearance with Arrow here. But I think that the rushing game is going to line up well for Washington. I mean, they're very stout up front. You saw how they defended against Houston, and then over the past games, they've been completely dominant against the run. So I'm interested to see how they handle Cordarrelle Patterson, just because his ability to run some routes, and how is he going to match up against linebackers like Jamin Davis and against other safeties. So there are some matchups out there that you have to pay attention to, and another one to think about is Marcus Mariota. The guy is going to use his legs, and you go back to how you had to handle Jalen Hurts. You adjust how you rush the passer a little bit to make sure you keep him in the pocket. So I do want to know, though. I want to ask you this, though. How does Atlanta replace a Kyle Pitts? He's such a weapon. How do you plan on replacing that?
Yeah, it's difficult, and some fans are very sort of negative about it in saying that, like, oh, well, you only threw him a handful of passes every game anyway, so, like, what are we really replacing? But I think the value of Kyle Pitts comes in a lot of ways. He's really developed as a blocker this year. They've made that a point of emphasis to make him closer to a guy that, and I think that's partially because they run the ball so much, but partially because they really do want teams to question whether or not he's going to go off into a route on these run plays. But I think just the presence and the threat of Kyle Pitts is so vital to this offense. And without it, I think it's going to make things even more difficult for a passing game that already wasn't really throwing the ball particularly well. And it wasn't throwing the ball particularly well to Kyle Pitts. One of the craziest stats is Pitts has been targeted, I think, over 60 times, but over 30% of his targets this year were considered uncatchable or off target. So it was a pretty dire situation there. They're just the chemistry between Mariota and Pitts was not really there. But I think without Pitts even being just a threat to take some of the pressure off the run game, that is not going to lead to any good things for the Falcons offense. And they do have some good tight ends, mostly blocking types in Parker Hesse and Michael Pruitt. And they're probably going to try to get Felipe Franks, who they've converted to tight end. He's sort of the Kyle Pitts backup because he's big and athletic. He just hasn't really shown an ability to catch anything yet this season. But if he ever figures it out, that's great. I mean, he was tearing it up in training camp. Now that the season started, hasn't really done much, but that's probably the guy they're going to try to lean on as a potential receiving threat at tight end. But yeah, at this point, it's dire, I think.
That's interesting. I was just watching the tape against the Bears, and I just was so interested to see, like, Kyle Pitts spent more time split out. Like, they use him more as a receiver. And I understand. I'm like, I kind of questioned it, but then I'm also wondering, I'm like, well, I mean, I guess you do get a good size advantage. Now you have, 6'5" Drake London on one side. Now you have Kyle Pitts, who's big and fast, on the other side. So maybe that's what they're thinking, but I don't know. That's not my job to see how to utilize these really talented players. But I mean, I think that Atlanta has some talented pieces. I mean, it is definitely, I think, a team that probably overachieving right now, yep. Being 5-6, but there's a bright future. You get the right quarterback, right system, and start playing up protection, I think you'd be okay.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I know that fans have been clamoring for Desmond Ridder, the rookie, which is, I think it's when they're still in playoff contention, it's hard to make a change like that. Obviously, the passing game has been very low volume and pretty limited with Mariota at the helm, but what he offers as a runner and his understanding of the offense that he's had multiple years in, even before coming to Atlanta, it makes a lot of sense. But it's a limited passing game, and without Kyle Pitts, it'll be even more limited, and I can't imagine that will help the running game in any way going into this matchup, where when the Falcons have faced a more stacked boxes, I think, than any other team this year on offense, and they've handled it well. I mean, they're still a top rushing attack, but it's really going to be hard against good defenses to get away with that. Like, they're going to have to make defenses pay for stacking the box eventually. I'm not sure that they're really, in their current construction, built for it. I mean, I think they have the passing game weapons. Mariota's been limited. I think it's partially his fault, but the other side of the coin is that the offensive line, while they've been excellent at run blocking, pretty bad at pass protection. So against good pass rushes also, that's another limiting factor for this offense.
I agree with all of that. I mean, that's what I saw on tape.
Yeah.
And the tape don't lie, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they've got, Chris Lindstrom, Jake Matthews, good pass blockers. Everyone else, it's been a little bit of a journey every single week watching the pass protection. But moving to the Washington side of the football, looking at the Washington passing game, Taylor Heinicke, again, I think has provided an upgrade over Carson Wentz. Now, that wasn't necessarily saying a lot, but I do think he's definitely provided a spark, as you said. We know the passing game weapons well with Terry McLaurin. Jahan Dotson, I know, had missed some time with injury, but I think he's back now. Curtis Samuel's been a very versatile player for them. And then, of course, the running backs in the passing game have always been a factor. So it gets the Falcons pass defense, which they did get A.J. Terrell back last week in a limited role. It seems like he'll be back more full-time this week. They do have Darren Hall, the second-year corner, who's been playing well. The safeties have been okay. The slot position's been okay. So hopefully the passing game has stabilized a bit for them, because in Terrell's absence, this was the NFL's worst pass defense. So Washington hasn't been incredible offensively. I think they're in the low 20s overall. But that was a lot of that was with Carson Wentz. So how do you feel about Washington's passing game matching up with the Falcons pass defense that's maybe getting a little healthier, maybe getting a little better at rushing the passer at this point in the season?
Well, one of the big things that I was looking at, I just noticed that they don't really bring that much pressure. And when they do, it's in certain situations. Like, they're trying to bring pressure on a third down. And I think the lack of sacks and not being able to bring pressure can can actually hurt against, you know, against a guy like Taylor Heinicke who can extend some plays, and you give him some time to get the ball to his playmakers, eventually somebody's going to get open. So outside of that, I think talent-wise, if A.J. Terrell's out there, you got to think, is he going to get focused on just on covering – turn my light off bright, man. is A.J. Terrell going to get matched up on Terry McLaurin? Do you have that ability to do so? I think Washington has a lot of weapons across the board. You mentioned all those receivers, plus Logan Thomas is back out there. And Heinicke is not afraid to get the ball to their best guy and Terry McLaurin. So he's going to get him the football. I think the matchup, it's pretty good simply because, you know, Falcons give up a lot of yards through the air. They really do.
A ton. Yes.
Yeah, close to 3,000 yards this year. So when you're sitting back in zones and you're not getting pressure with your front four, it ends up having – that's how your quarterback sounds, right? He's like, help me, get open.
It's been a dicey situation, certainly. The Falcons have had to play a lot of zone, particularly after Terrell went down. I think they've actually played a lot better in man, but the pass rush hasn't been there. Last week, they were able to finally get some pressure going against the Bears, who we know have maybe the worst pass protection situation in the league, and Justin Fields takes a lot of sacks. So they finally had a good sack game, 4 sacks last week. But they've done that only one time this year otherwise, which was week 1. So it's been a very up and down performance by the pass defense, but mostly down. And I agree with you that it's tough for them to really stop any concerted effort to pass against them. All right, Anthony, let's transition into talking about the Commanders' rushing attack versus the Falcons' run defense. Atlanta's run defense actually been solid. I think they're 11th in yards per carry allowed. They have faced a lot of good rushing attacks, especially over the last few weeks, like I just mentioned, the Bears. So they've given up some overall yardage, but in terms of efficiency, been pretty solid. Doesn't seem like the run game is a huge factor for Washington. I believe they're, about league average, but in overall yardage, but close to the bottom in terms of efficiency, with only 3.9 yards per attempt on average. I know there's certainly some buzz around Brian Robinson, who's a terrific story. He's provided a spark there. Antonio Gibson, always been a quality running back, also a very good pass catcher. I know J.D. McKissic is a factor there as well. What do you think about that? And then also, of course, at the offensive line's ability to open holes there, it is a diverse group. I know Andrew Norwell was a guy that the Falcons were super excited to potentially bring in. Didn't end up making that work. It seems like that hasn't been the most impactful addition, certainly, but there's a lot of guys there that are good. I know Charles Leno is having a great season, and you guys have had to weather some injuries as well. So how do you feel about the run game's ability to match up with Atlanta's actually pretty decent run defense?
Yeah, I think that it's going to be one where they're just trading blows back and forth. You know, Washington, they have a commitment to the run as of late. It's a part of their identity. Brian Robinson brings that physicality. You think of it like a flash and dash of the old Titans of the past, right? Thunder and lightning. So, you know, Brian Robinson is going to be that physical back that's going to run in between the tackles, get downhill, and move the pile. You know, he's very, very, very aggressive run. He doesn't give up. So it's good to have his presence. And I mentioned it earlier. He gives Antonio Gibson that chance to work around the edge. And looking at the tape against the Bears, I mean, the secondary for the Falcons, they're not too interested in getting in there and trying to tackle somebody. So I think it was the first carry of the game, David Montgomery was on the edge. It was 3 missed tackles. Yep. And I'm like, you could tell just right there, these guys don't want anything to do with this tackling. So AG on the edge is going to be something that you're going to see happen a lot, trying to get him in space and think about the receivers. I mean, the short passing game is an extension of the running game, and Curtis Samuel is one of the most dynamic players in space. So he's going to be able to make some people miss, and there can be some big plays. But when you just talk about handing it off to the running back, I would love to see Washington average four and a half yards carry versus three and a half yards. And that way you'd see some instant, you know, those numbers go up. But it's the amount of carries and the commitment to the run that makes this offense tick. So once again, I wouldn't expect them to have a huge day on the ground just because Atlanta does do a pretty good job against the run. But the commitment to the run is going to be paramount for Washington.
Yeah, I know it's important. And the Falcons as well, of course, one of the highest volume run teams in the NFL. So definitely know what that looks like. And yeah, I'd expect Washington to try it. It's one of those things where I feel like eventually teams always take the path of least resistance against the Falcons and figure out that, like, actually, if you just throw the ball, you could just yards are always there. So it's like teams eventually go towards that.
Yeah, but the tough part, though, and I don't have any problem with it. Like, I get it. But, you know, you got a quarterback, you know, love Taylor Heineke, but he's been prone to, you know, throw the ball away and give it away to the team here and there. Hell, Carson Wentz has too. So it's kind of, a lot of people will do it. So you just got to avoid those bad plays. So if you're making good decisions with the football, then sure, you can throw it away, chuck it around all up and down the field all you want. It's just make sure that the team, the Falcons don't get the ball. You don't want them to get it. So, I think the way that the Falcons play defense, they need the pass rush to show up more. If you're only going to have four, you really got to make sure you get home. If you're not, then you're going to give up 3,000 yards through 11 games.
Yeah, and it hasn't been good, like I said, so far in the pass rushing department. They did have a big game last week, but that was the Bears, and we all know about their pass protection woes. So we'll see if they can turn it on this week against the Commanders, who I think have been solid at protecting the quarterback. I don't think it's – I mean, Washington's always known for having a very good offensive line, so but yeah, I mean, it's definitely a matchup, I think, on paper that favors Washington, particularly when Washington's on defense. I just have a hard time seeing the Falcons beat. They're a team that's going to blast teams that can't stop the run. They will absolutely blast teams that can't do that with the run game. But if you could stop the run, and of course, if you have a good pass defense, the passing game is so limited for the Falcons. Now without Kyle Pitts, it's a very dangerous situation for them to be in, where if they can't run the ball effectively and they get into third and longs against a good pass defense, I don't think this is a passing game that can really succeed there. They have managed to create some turnovers on the defensive side, so that's always an equalizing factor. I know you mentioned, you know, that's his weakness. Is he does,
you got like what, yeah, 9 interceptions on the year. But you only have 17 sacks, I think, were the numbers. Yeah. So, like I said, you're not getting home, but there are some good chances that, you know, you're getting your hands on the football. So it's definitely a trade-off. But, you know, Washington, it doesn't favor them to get into a shootout where you're trying to throw the ball up and down the field. Hand that sucker off 40 times. That's what they're going to do. It's going to be like that. And there'll be some big plays throughout the game, but we don't want to throw it 40 times. Not at all.
Yeah. No, I think that's very fair, and the Falcons have tended to make every game close, except for two. And the ones that weren't close probably could have been close if a couple plays changed. So that's definitely been one thing they're good at. So I do think that it's going to be a one-score game because that's just how this Falcons team plays. But how are you feeling about this game? What's your prediction going into Week 12 for how this one's going to go?
You know, I think Washington's are 2.5-point favorites, and I think they can cover that. Hell, I think they can probably win by 7. This is just a team that's on the right trajectory right now. They're going in the right direction, and the matchup against Atlanta, like we've already been over it, everything kind of checks the boxes in Washington's favor. A couple things you do need to watch out for: make sure you keep Marcus Mariota contained. Cordarrelle Patterson is a very talented player. You saw that guy can still scamper. He can still take it 100-some-odd yards for a touchdown. So if the special teams are sound, and just play your game. Play your game with Washington, I think they'll be okay. I think that defense is just going to be just too smothering early and often against Atlanta. So I think Washington can get this game. They can win it probably like a 27-10 type of a matchup, maybe 27-17 if they want it to get a little interesting.
Yeah, I think right about that is what I'm expecting as well. I don't like the matchup. It's a crucial game for the Falcons, so I'm sure they'll come out you know, fired up for this one. So we'll see if they can make something happen. But yeah, I do think that it's probably going to be like a 27-20 type of game or something along those lines, because I just don't see them having a great day offensively. But the equalizer would be if they can keep Washington from having a good day offensively, because if they can get the turnovers, that's the one path I see for them to possibly pull off an upset here. But it's crucial. It's crucial for both teams, because Washington's got to keep pace in the NFC East and take advantage if the Giants falter, and the Falcons probably can't afford to lose again before their bye in week 14 if they want to keep up with the Bucks, who we're still trying to see if the Bucks can do anything. Because if the Bucks keep losing, then maybe, you know, you could just coast right into the playoffs with a losing record. But I'm not going to depend on that.
Can they just take the whole division out? Just eliminate the whole division this year.
It's one of those years, yeah, where it's like it's possible that you could get a losing record team with a top four seed from the NFC
South. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that happened. I don't know if it was the last time from that division. The Saints did it, and they went all the way up to, well, they got to host the game and ended up beating the Seahawks or something like that. So
yeah, the Panthers also, I think they got in at 7-8-1. One year recently, so.
And the Commanders got in with they won the division with a sub 500 record. So, hey, all you got to do is get into the playoffs. And once you're there, you know, you let the chips fall where they may. And but right now, this weekend right here, this is going to be a tough one for Atlanta, man. I think you're going to have a rough matchup up there in FedEx.
Yeah, I do think it doesn't line up well for Atlanta, but we'll see if they, the last time I felt this bad about the actual matchup, they ended up beating the 49ers, but that team was hilariously injured, so I don't think the Commanders are dealing with anywhere near the volume of injuries that the 49ers are, so we can't depend on that this time. But Anthony, really appreciate your time, guys. He is at Mr. Armstrong 13 on Twitter, host of the Believe in Commanders podcast. Anything else you want to add or plug, Anthony, before we sign off?
Man, I appreciate y'all for listening, and Kevin, I appreciate your patience in getting this one filmed. And I find it crazy. So my co-host Brian Murphy, he's in Atlanta. He's a Washington fan. You're in upstate New York. You're an Atlanta fan. So everybody's all over the place. The internet is a crazy thing, man. But no, appreciate y'all. Check us out, Believe in Commanders, on all streaming platforms. Appreciate you, Kevin.
Absolutely, guys. And I am Kevin Knight at Falcoholic Kevin. You can follow me there on Twitter, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Leave us a 5-star review if you're listening. Like and subscribe for watching this on YouTube. And we will be back Wednesday night because this is being filmed early. But well, this, you won't hear this till after Wednesday night, but you can go back and listen to the live show that's going to be filmed Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. And then, of course, you can check out the post-game show coming on Sunday after the conclusion of the game. But, guys, again, thank you for watching the Falcoholic Podcast. Thanks again to Anthony for coming on, and we will see you next time. Have a great day, folks.